Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
Russia orders troops into eastern Ukraine after recognizing two breakaway territories as independent.
This is huge. It allows Russia to basically have free rein in a part of the country that used to be Ukraine.
Plus, fears of war in Europe send stocks lower and oil surging, and Canada moves to extend emergency powers after a tense weekend in Ottawa. It's Tuesday, February 22nd. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Russian President Vladimir Putin has ordered Russian troops into two breakaway regions of Ukraine after recognizing their independence. According to witnesses and footage on social media, columns of Russian military vehicles poured into the eastern Ukrainian region of Donetsk overnight. However, local authorities have not yet confirmed their arrival. Putin said last night that the Russian forces would act in a peacekeeping role in Donetsk and Luhansk. Daniel Nassau is an editor in the Wall Street Journal's Washington Bureau.
This is a major escalation because he's sending Russian troops onto the territory of a sovereign country, that is Ukraine. The rest of the world is not anytime soon, if ever, going to recognize that these two regions are not part of Ukraine, whether Putin wants them to stay independent or eventually annex them into Russia. The rest of the world is not going to go along.
The move threatens to scuttle negotiations with the West over the future security of Eastern Europe. In a United Nations Security Council meeting last night, the U.S. representative to the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, called Russia's moves hostile.
Russia's clear attack on Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity is unprovoked. It is an attack on Ukraine's status as a UN member state. It violates a basic principle of international law, and it defies our charter. What is more, this move by President Putin is clearly the basis for Russia's attempt to create a pretext for a further invasion of Ukraine.
The White House said that President Biden strongly condemned Putin's decision to recognize the two breakaway regions of Ukraine and said it planned to issue sanctions. This morning, the UK announced plans for a barrage of economic sanctions against Moscow. Global stock markets fell following the developments, while crude oil prices are nearing $100 a barrel for the first time since 2014, on worry that supply could be constrained in the event of a Russian response to any potential Western sanctions. We'll have more analysis on the situation in Ukraine later in the show. Canada's lower house of parliament has voted to extend emergency powers used to quell protests against the government's COVID-19 mandates. The move allows police to designate certain areas as no-protest zones and compel service providers like tow truck operators to remove vehicles used in demonstrations. They also include tools to target the financial assets of protesters and their funding sources. But critics, including the Canadian Civil Liberties Association, say the measures are too broad. Meanwhile, police and protesters have clashed in Wellington, New Zealand, as police tightened a cordon around a protest convoy that has been camped outside Parliament for 2 weeks. The protesters were inspired by the demonstrations in Canada and are also protesting COVID-19 rules. Colombia has decriminalized abortion up to the 24th week of pregnancy after the country's high court ruled that criminalizing selective abortions violated women's constitutional rights. The decision marks a historic shift for the conservative and Catholic nation and comes on the heels of Argentina and Mexico making similar moves in roughly the last year. HSBC has reported its highest annual net profit since 2018 and made a bullish forecast thanks to rising interest rates. The banking giant also plans another $1 billion share buyback in addition to the previous $2 billion buyback announced last year. That said, HSBC shares slid in Hong Kong and London after the bank budgeted for a potential $450 million credit loss related to stress in China's property market. Our Asia Markets editor Quinton Webb says analysts were taken by surprise.
This is a bit of a turnaround because last quarter, HSBC effectively said it hadn't lent to any of the so-called three red lines developers, the ones that were in breach of all of the Chinese government's limits. And so it sort of said it wasn't complacent, but it also wasn't too worried. And now it has turned around and said, actually, it has to sock away this amount of money as provisions. It's not a huge sum in the context of a big bank like HSBC, but it does show how the turmoil within the Chinese property sector intensified in the fourth quarter.
And we're exclusively reporting that Yale Law School plans to go tuition-free for students with family income below the federal poverty line starting next fall. The move is akin to what some of the wealthiest American colleges do for undergraduate students, though that practice remains less common at graduate schools where students often borrow tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars to finance their education. Yale says it hopes expanded scholarships will help it attract a more diverse student population. Coming up, amid a flurry of headlines from Russia and Ukraine over the last 24 hours, we'll speak with the Journal's Moscow bureau chief to put developments into perspective and look ahead to what's likely to play out in the hours to come. That's after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
After weeks of watching Russia's military amass along Ukraine's borders, Moscow has now ordered troops into two breakaway regions in Ukraine. But is Russia's recognition of Donetsk and Luhansk as independent the Kremlin's true endgame or a mere prelude to a wider invasion of Ukraine? And are the many international reactions we've seen to Russia's actions enough to hold Vladimir Putin in check? Here to help us make sense of these latest developments is the Journal's Moscow bureau chief, Anne Simmons. Anne, welcome.
Thank you.
Anne, we are now reporting that the Russian military has crossed into Donetsk. How significant are Moscow's actions over the last 24 hours?
Oh, they're extremely important because the recognition of these two breakaway areas means essentially that Russia is able to justify moving into these territories because they are no longer under the control, in their opinion, of the government in Kiev. So if these are independent territories, Russia can make a deal as a sovereign nation with other independent territories. So this is huge. It allows Russia to basically have free rein in a part of the country that used to be Ukraine.
And what has Ukraine's response been to both this recognition and, not least, to the deployment of the Russian military onto its territory?
Oh, there's been outrage on the part of the Ukrainian government. In a speech late last night, President Volodymyr Zelensky said that this amounts to a breach of Ukrainian sovereignty. But he has continued to urge the population to keep calm in the face of this threat. And they have said that they are ready to fight back. Ukrainians are ready to take on Russia if it comes to that.
Talk to me about the sanctions that are in the works against Russia and any reactions we've seen from foreign heads of state so far.
The West appears to be scrambling right now to decide what type of action to take and how strong the action should be in these early stages, because it's still not clear whether some nations are considering this to be an invasion as opposed to just a small incursion. The Biden administration has made clear that there will be punitive sanctions down the road, but right now it has taken a kind of cautious approach. It started with bans on new investment and financing in some of the separatist regions, and that could be essentially quite tough for those regions. And certainly in the European Union, we've seen many of the heads of state there, senior officials, condemning the move and saying that there need to be heavy sanctions imposed on Russia. And there will be meetings today in terms of discussing what to do next. So we're likely to see in the coming days a kind of flurry of activity and a series of very hard measures imposed on Russia by the European Union.
Is it likely any of those sanctions threats could make a difference in changing Vladimir Putin's calculus here?
At this point, no. Russia has decided, and Mr. Putin has decided, that eastern Ukraine, the Donbas region, where you have these two breakaway territories of Donetsk and Luhansk, belong to Russia. He was really clear in his speech last evening. And it was a very long and passionate and oftentimes angry monologue. He was really clear that Ukraine is part of Russia. Ukraine is not really a sovereign state. And he gave this historical explanation of how Ukraine became what it is today. So Mr. Putin has made clear that part of Ukraine essentially belongs to Russia.
And is there a sense that we haven't seen Russia's last move here yet? And if so, what are experts watching for next?
There is a possibility that this could go beyond eastern Ukraine, and that is certainly what experts are watching for. How far will Vladimir Putin go? Will he try to take Kiev, the capital of Ukraine? Will his forces start moving in within the next week to try and take over the population? It's really kind of a tense situation right now. And there's a level of uncertainty because on the one hand, he could just stop with eastern Ukraine and say, okay, I've got part of this particular country, which I no longer actually recognize as being Ukraine. Or he could use it as a prelude to move further in to mainland Ukraine.
With all of this in mind, Anne, is there any room left for diplomacy still, or have we crossed a point of no return?
One likes to think there is always room for diplomacy. And in fact, this week, there was a meeting scheduled that was meant to take place between U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov of Russia. That meeting was meant to take place only if there wasn't an invasion. So it would be very interesting to see whether it still happens. That would definitely tell whether or not the US believes that an invasion has occurred. And if that meeting takes place, there was going to be kind of discussions as to whether a summit should take place between Presidents Putin and Biden. So there's always room for negotiation. There has been diplomatic activity right up until the brink, right up until Mr. Putin said that he would recognize these territories. So there's definitely always a possibility for a diplomatic solution.
That was the Journal's Moscow Bureau Chief Anne Simmons. Anne, thank you for the update.
Thank you for having me.
And finally, if between doping subplots, images of near-empty stadiums, and seemingly ever-present geopolitical tensions made this year's Winter Olympics feel not quite as entertaining as you hoped, you're not alone. It turns out the Beijing Games drew the smallest U.S. primetime audience ever recorded for the Olympics since NBC Universal began broadcasting them in the late 80s. The network even had to give advertisers additional commercial time to make up for the audience shortfall. But despite those challenges, NBC may still have walked away with a viewership medal as its Peacock streaming service recorded its best 18-day span of usage since launching in 2020. And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.